Good morning. Keep your Bibles open to that passage. We're going to be there in just a moment. I had introduced a couple of weeks back that I was going to be doing a series on Dinner with a Pharisee. And I'm not real great at coming up with sermon names. They don't have a lot of pizzazz when I come up with sermon names. It's Dinner with a Pharisee. It's kind of straightforward. When we went to Polishing the Pulpit, the preacher seminar last year, actually 2 years ago, one of the guys that I met, one of the preachers that I became friends with, was from Washington, D.C. And we used to meet together at about 10 o'clock at night, and we'd go through what we called sermon swaps. You would just sit down, and you would say, hey, here was my sermon outline, and here's how I preached it, and here's my title for it. And as we were doing this, we noticed that his sermons always lacked any pizzazz for sermon titles. They were always a closer look at. And so it became a joke. Anytime someone had a sermon, we always started saying, it's a closer look at a dinner with a Pharisee. It's a closer look at Jesus Christ. So mine lacked a little bit of pizzazz, but his are worse. There's not a lot of point to that, except for to say this. I called it Dinner with a Pharisee, and when you look at the original text, in this context, it's actually not a dinner. It's probably an early meal, a breakfast, a lunch. And it could be that it was kind of a combo brunch, because according to some stuff I read, they didn't do breakfasts. They kind of did just a brunch. So anyways, I called it Dinner with the Pharisee, but to be honest and true to the text, probably not a dinner. Not that it changes the point of the lesson a lot, but just so you know. So we're going to look at here, beginning in verse 37. And it says here, that says, while Jesus was speaking. And I just want you to note here what Jesus is doing. He's in the middle of teaching people. If you look at verse 27, he's talking. There's a woman in the crowd. She raises her voice. She said, you know, she blesses Jesus. Then in verse 29, the crowds are increasing. They're still getting larger and larger. And so the point I'm wanting you to see here is that Jesus is in the middle of an evangelistic opportunity. He is teaching. He is preaching. He's sharing his message. And somebody interrupts and says, hey, will you come meet at my house? And this person is a Pharisee. And as we talked about, when we talked about Dinner with the Pharisee, the first lesson, I made this point. It's kind of interesting why the Pharisees invite Jesus to dinner in the first place. And we talked about that a little bit. And why is this gentleman inviting Jesus to dinner, to lunch, to meal, whatever? We don't really know why he's inviting him. The text seems to indicate later that he has ulterior motives. But we don't really know why he invites him. But as we pointed out last time when we did this first lesson, Jesus never declines an invitation. And I made the joke, I said, Don Rule never declines a meal either, but Jesus didn't decline a meal for different reasons. Oh, I shouldn't say that, sounded bad. Don, if you're listening, later scratch that. Jesus never declined a meal. Jesus never declined an invitation to someone's home. And again, why does he do this? Because he knew every time it's an opportunity to teach. So here he is, he has large crowds gathered, and a Pharisee who, generally speaking, the Pharisees hated Christ. They despised him, they didn't like what he said, they didn't like how he taught, they didn't like how he was changing things that they thought were important. And again, not the case for every Pharisee, but frequently that was the case. He invites him to dinner. While he's speaking, a Pharisee asked him to dine with him. So he went and reclined at table. Verse 38. The Pharisee was astonished to see that he did not first wash before dinner. Now, the washing to the Jew, this was a very significant thing. Okay, now for us, you know, we wash our hands before dinner, before lunch. Hopefully you guys do. And by the way, as we go through this lesson, you can't use this lesson to say, well, see, I don't have to wash my hands anymore. Still wash your hands before you're eating. It's just good hygiene. But Jesus doesn't wash his hands, and it says the Jew here, he's astonished. He notices it because the Jews believed that as I go through my day, I'm going to touch things that are unclean. Not in the sense that there's germs on them. Not in the sense that, oh, that's gross. They're unclean, that they are ceremonially, ritually unclean, and I've touched them. So I don't want to touch that and then touch my lamb and then eat the lamb, because then I'm going to somehow be defiled by what I'm eating. That's how they thought. So they made a big deal about washing your hands before you're eating. And they had very specific rules and regulations on how you were to wash your hands. You had to have a certain amount of water to use. And you had to start by pouring the water over your fingertips down towards your wrist. And then you had to use your fist and rub your palm. And then after doing that, then you would take the same amount of water and now pour it the opposite direction and do the same thing on both hands. They were very specific. And you had to wash before you were eating. And during the course of the meal, you had to wash between any change in courses. So if you went from appetizers to your salad, you better wash your hands again. So Jesus, of course, He knows their rituals. He knows their ceremonies. He knows what they're waiting to do. He knows they're watching Him. And He sits down and He does not wash His hands. And it's kind of interesting. Well, why doesn't He wash His hands? If He knows that's what they want, if He knows that's what they expect, why doesn't He just wash their hands? And I think the answer is quite obvious. Because Jesus was looking for, seeking for an opportunity to teach. And He knew by not washing His hands, He was going to have an opportunity. So the Jew here, the Pharisee who invites Him, says he's astonished. Now the text never indicates that the Pharisee says anything out loud. Never indicates that he says, whoa, he never says anything. But notice what Jesus says in verse 39. And the Lord said to him, now you Pharisees, cleanse the outside of the cup and the dish, but inside you are full of greed and wickedness. Jesus doesn't have to hear the Pharisee's comment. He doesn't have to hear the Pharisee make a statement. And this is, again, one of those little subtle texts that are all through the Gospels that demonstrate the deity of Christ. It's so subtle, it's so small, but don't miss it. Jesus knew the thoughts of this man before the man ever said them, before he ever acknowledges them. Jesus knew what he was thinking, and he's going to address his thoughts. So he says, again, now you Pharisees. Now he's talking to a group full, which is a group of people, probably mostly Pharisees. He's sitting in a Pharisee's house, and he says, now you Pharisees, you wash the outside, but inside you are full of greed and wickedness. He says you're full of it. You don't just have a little greed, a little wickedness. You are full of greed and wickedness. How would you like to be invited to have somebody, you invite somebody over and say, Paul Hannon, come over and eat dinner with me. Paul Hannon accepts. He's there at the table. And now you houses, you are full of greed and wickedness. I will guarantee you I would not invite Paul Hannon back. Where is Paul? I saw him a minute ago. I would not invite Paul Hannon back if he did that to me. Jesus sits down at the Pharisee's table and he says, you're full of greed and wickedness. You're worried about cleaning the outside of the cup, but inside, no concern. Verse 40, we're going to come back and talk about some of that in a second. Verse 40, he's still going, you fools. Again, he's a guest in your house. You fools. Did not he who made the outside make the inside also? But give as alms those things that are within, and behold, everything is clean for you. See, Jesus Christ was extremely blunt in dealing with the Pharisees. The Apostle Paul told us in the book of Ephesians, he says, speak the truth in love. And I don't want you to miss this very interesting point here. Jesus Christ is never going to go against what he told the Apostle Paul to write. Because again, Paul was inspired by God to write that. So Jesus Christ, here's an interesting point, and I want you to see this. Christ is speaking in love here. That's kind of hard for us to see, isn't it? The point I'm trying to make is sometimes we have to be blunt in dealing with people who are sinners. Sometimes we have to hit him between the eyes. Sometimes you can't sugarcoat things. Sometimes you have to do tough love. Sometimes you have to say things that are going to be a little harsh on the surface, but it's because you love them. And so Christ tells them, and Christ loves these guys. Don't mistake that. Christ loves them. He says, you fools. Well, why are they fools? Because they had improper priorities. They had improper priorities. You see, they were putting emphasis on the wrong things. They thought it was so important to clean the hands, it was so important to wash your body, so important to clean the outside of that cup, and they cared so much about those things which were superficial. But they cared so little about the cleanliness of their insides. They cared so little about their heart, about their mind, about their spirit, about their soul. And Jesus' comment was that if they were diligent about their hearts as they were about their hands, He said, you'd be clean all over. He says, again, you're full of greed and wickedness. You know, if you were to go into the world and you were to sit at somebody's house, and I don't care whose house it is, and you were to tell them they were full of greed and wickedness, they'd be offended. But Jesus Christ isn't just talking with anybody in the world. He's sitting in the house of the religious elite, of those who led other people, of those who taught other people. He's sitting in their house, And he says, you are full of greed and wickedness. These were the religious leaders. They kept the traditions. They kept the external regulations. But inwardly, they were rotten. And again, Jesus did not object. Jesus did not object to their cleaning their hands, right? He didn't object to that. That's not his point. That's not the problem. Here's an interesting thought, or an interesting point, hopefully, for you to consider. They were concerned about looking good. They wanted to look good. They wanted everybody else to think they looked good. Do we ever kind of fall into this trap that we are concerned about how we look? You know, maybe we put too much emphasis on cleaning the outside, but we're neglecting the inside. Do we ever fall into that trap? You know, we need to be at church on Sunday morning. You better be there. I think you should be at church on Sunday morning. But do we ever think that that is the most important thing? Well, you know, you need to make sure that you drop that check into the collection plate. That's so important. And so we put so much emphasis on being here at church on Sunday morning, so much emphasis on dropping that check into the collection plate, and yet we put so little emphasis on our own spiritual lives. You know, we'll make sure we're here on Sunday, we'll make sure we put our check in there, but we'll leave the worship service spiritually unclean. Verse 41, he says, give as alms those things that are within. Alms were gifts that were given to those who were poor, right? And I think that in this context, I think personally, it goes a little beyond just giving to the poor. I think he's talking about give as gifts, give as good things, those things that are within. You see, it's kind of interesting because these Pharisees were unwilling to give to others, to God, the good things from the heart. But they were willing to give to God what? I'll wash my hands for you, God. Okay, God, I'll be at Sunday worship service for you, God. I'll give my collection for you, God, but I'm not going to turn off the television when it's inappropriate. Yeah, I'm not going to do that, God. I'll give you my Sunday worship time. I'll give you my collection plate, God. But don't ask me to work hard at work because my boss, he's just a jerk and I don't like him. So don't ask me to do that, God. You know, I'm not saying those things about worship and collection and contribution to say don't do those things. Do those things. But not at the neglect of your taking care of your own inward person, your own inward soul. We are to be, what did Christ say? You're the light of the world. When we leave here, we're the light of the world. We're the example to those who are walking in darkness. We need to make sure our lives are right. We need to be not like the Pharisees who were concerned about the inward, about the outward things. We need to focus on the inward things. There is no doubt that God wanted them to do those small things. You know, those things that were important, they were moral. He wants them to do those things. He wants us here on Sunday. He wants you to contribute. These you ought to do, but you cannot neglect the more important things. The Apostle Paul said, in fact, I'm going to have you turn there. Go to 2 Corinthians chapter 8. Hold your finger here in Luke. We're going to come back. But go to 2 Corinthians chapter 8. So I was talking, the point I was trying to make right now is that we need to be very careful and be diligent about what we are offering to God. And I want you to notice here in 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 5, it says that the Apostle Paul here is talking about the Macedonians. These Christians in Macedonia, and he said here, he says, they gave themselves first. They gave themselves first to the Lord, and then by the will of God to us. They gave themselves first to God and then to us. I don't think that you could talk about the Macedonians and say about them their biggest concern was the outside. Because the first thing they gave was themselves to God and then to the fellow Christians, the apostles, those who were preaching and teaching. And this is Jesus' point. Go back to Luke chapter 11. This is Jesus' point in the very next verse. We're going to see that in verse 42. This is the point Christ is still trying to make. That we need to give ourselves, that we need to not neglect the important things. That those things that we think are the most important just might not be. Look at what he says in verse 42. He says, but woe to you Pharisees. And that word woe, just so you know, it's an expression of both anger and pity. Anger and pity, that's a nice combination because Christ is angry with them because they're supposed to know what to do and how to do it. They're supposed to be living the life they're supposed to be. But He's also full of pity towards them because He knows what is at stake here. So He has anger and pity towards them. He says, "Woe to you, Pharisees, for you tithe mint and rue and every herb, and you neglect justice and the love of God. These you ought to have done without neglecting the others." He says, you tithe mint and rue and every single herb. We all know what a tithe was, right? A tithe was a giving of towards God of 10% of what you had. So if you had a farm and you had, for me it was almonds, if we had almonds and if we were still living underneath the Jewish system, we would have to give to God 10% of the financial benefit from our almond orchard, or 10%, or just 10% of the nuts, and let, you know, somebody else could sell them, I guess. But we would have to give 10% of that. But you see, the Pharisees took it so, it took it to a whole other level. That'd be like saying, okay, not only do you need to give 10% of that almond orchard, but I noticed, house family, that you guys had a little mint plant in your garden. And you need to take off 10% of those leaves and make sure you give those financial benefit from that to God. And then I noticed you had over here a little chive plant, so cut off 10% of the chive and give that to God. And if you don't do that, then you're a sinner. You see, they took the tithe and they made it something it was not supposed to be. Now, Jesus didn't say, don't do that. In fact, He said, good job, keep doing that. But what were they doing? They made that so important, but they were neglecting, look at these important things they were neglecting. Justice and the love of God. They were neglecting justice and the love of God. In the book of Matthew, chapter 23, Christ is talking and He's doing a very similar discourse. You know, the seven woes to the Pharisees there. He's giving a very similar discourse. And He states that not only are they neglecting justice and love, but He also states they were neglecting mercy and faithfulness. Could it be said of Christians that we sometimes say, it's so important to be here at worship on Sundays, you better be here, you better make your contribution, but we're going to neglect justice, the love of God, mercy towards fellow Christians, mercy towards those in the world, and faithfulness. Are we ever going to find ourselves neglecting those things which are so important and elevating, and again, please do not misunderstand me, but elevating being here on Sunday to the point that that's the most important thing? And again, be here every Sunday when you can. But that's the point Christ is making. They had their priorities all messed up. Some things were so important. And they were important, but not as important as they made them, perhaps. But they neglected these things that were so important. They were offering to God a neglectful tithe. There's a contemporary Christian song, and it says something to the effect, we're getting back to the heart of worship. Well, what does it mean to get back to the heart of worship? What does that mean? Well, if I were to ask you, and you guys know this answer, right? It's an Old Testament answer. It's all through Scripture. What does God want more, your sacrifice or your obedience? What is the answer? You guys know that answer, right? God wants your obedience. God wants you to obey Him. Sacrifice is important, right? God wants us to sacrifice. We're supposed to be ourselves a living sacrifice to God. God wants us to sacrifice. But if we're going to sacrifice to God at the expense of obeying what He has said to do, we're in a lot of trouble. God, and that's what they're guilty of here. They're neglecting obedience for sacrifice. Again, notice His words in verse 42. He says, these you ought to have done, those small things, without neglecting the others. The problem was, they were neglecting the important things and focusing on the small things. Let's pick up in verse 43. Woe to you, Pharisees, for you love the best seat in the synagogues and greetings in the marketplaces. Woe to you, for you are like unmarked graves and people walk over them without knowing it. He says in verse 43, he says, you love the best seats in the synagogues. Well, the synagogue situation was such that there was the general audience, and then there was seats that would be facing the general audience. And these seats were elevated. Everybody can see them. And so those seats were for the ones who were really, really religious, really good people. And they were such important seats that the Pharisees wanted them very much. And in fact, according to most commentaries, and in fact, according to some scriptures, it seems to be that they would even pay money to get into that seat. I want that seat. That's a good seat. People can see me the whole worship service. They'll see how spiritual I am, how righteous I am. I'm going to give some money. And so the seats would be sold to the highest bidder. And he says to these Pharisees, you love the best seats in the synagogues. You love the greetings in the marketplace. You love it when somebody sees you in the marketplace and says, Rabbi, Brother Pharisee. And you love those things. Those things are so important to you. He continues, woe to you. Again, anger and pity. He says, because you are like unmarked graves. Unmarked graves. And people walk over them without knowing it. It's kind of interesting, as talking about the love of the seats, I kind of want to jump backwards for a second. Did you notice this? That in verse 42, he says, you neglect the love of God. But in verse 43, he says, but you love the seats in the synagogues. Isn't that kind of interesting? You neglect the love of God, but you love the seats in the synagogues. You know, I think that as Christian men, Christian women, we should all strive to be leaders where we can. We need to strive to be examples where we can, leaders where we can. But we have to be careful that we are striving to be leaders, not because we're wanting our name up on that billboard, not because we're wanting our name written in the bulletin. I have heard people say, I want to be an elder. And you know what? I heard that from people who both deserved it and did not deserve it. What is our motivation? These people were motivated not by the love of God, but by the honor that came from sitting in the front. By the honor that came from being called rabbi, Pharisee, brother, all those things. That's what motivated them. And then Jesus contrasts them. This is kind of interesting, verse 43 and 44. Jesus is going to contrast them. Verse 43 is their perceived value, or their perceived, how great they think of themselves. So their perceived value. He's going to contrast that with verse 44, which is their actual value. You love that seat, you love that recognition, but here's what you are. You're unmarked graves. In the New Testament times, if there was a leper and he was to come into the city, he had to stand away from everybody else. There was a certain distance he had to stay away because he didn't want to get somebody else sick with leprosy. And we'd have to shout at the top of his voice so that nobody would misunderstand that. He would have to say, unclean, unclean, so that nobody would get defiled, both spiritually defiled or physically ill. He had to yell, unclean, unclean, stay away from me. But there were times where people would perhaps walk across a tomb, something that was buried, and touch a defiled area, an unmarked grave, and they would become unclean. And Jesus says here in verse 44, He says, you are like unmarked graves. What's the point He's making? Well, again, according to Numbers chapter 19, verse 16, if you were to walk over a grave, that made you unclean. So what is Jesus' point? He's telling the Pharisees, you're like a grave that no one sees. You're like a grave that no one knows is there, and they touch you, and they're unclean because how unclean you are. In Matthew chapter 23, Christ tells them what? You're full of dead man's bones. He says, you're making them unclean. You see, they covered their sins so that they appeared clean, the Pharisees did. But inwardly, what did he say? You're full of greed and wickedness. I have a quote I want to read to you from William Barclay. Listen to this quote. Although men might not know it, their influence, talking about the Pharisees, could do nothing but harm. All unawares, the men who came in contact with them was being touched for evil. Men might not suspect the corruption, but it was there. All the time they were being infected with wrong ideas of God and of the demands of God. You see, the problems with the Pharisees is they concentrated on the external things but neglected the internal. So Christ here, He's talking to the Pharisees. He gives them these woes, these challenges, these chastisements. And then in verse 45, one of the lawyers answers Him. So what? They weren't just the Pharisees there. There were lawyers there. The lawyers answers Him, Teacher, in saying these things, you insult us also. And Christ doesn't want to leave anybody out. So He says, verse 46, and He said, woe to you lawyers also. For you load people with burdens hard to bear, and you yourselves do not touch the burdens with one of your fingers. I want to read to you or share with you some of the things that the lawyers would do. You see, the lawyers taught that a man could not go beyond 1,000 yards from his property. So if you have a piece of property on the Sabbath day, on a Sabbath day, you couldn't go 1,000 yards beyond that because then it was considered work. So you could walk anywhere on your property within 1,000 yards. So this is what the lawyers taught. But the lawyers then, they made a little loophole. They would tie a piece of rope onto the furthest piece of their property, and then they would say, well, that rope is now my property, so now at the end of that rope, I can go 1,000 yards beyond that. And so then they'd tie another rope on that. So pretty soon their ropes were pretty long. And so they would make these laws. You can't go 1,000 yards beyond your property on a Sabbath day. But then they would find loopholes for themselves so that they could do it. This is kind of interesting. They also taught that on a Sabbath day they could not tie certain knots. Certain knots they taught were forbidden to tie on a Sabbath day. You could not tie a sailor's knot. Could not tie a camel driver's knot. I don't know what that is. You might. You could not tie a knot in a regular piece of rope. But a woman could tie a knot for her girdle. So on a Sabbath day, they thought, well, if I needed water from the well, I can't tie a sailor knot or a camel driver knot or a regular knot. But if I use my wife's girdle, I can tie that onto the bucket. And then I can pull the water up with her girdle and that's okay. You see, they made these burdens for people. They made it hard for people to bear. You can't do this, you can't do that. And then he makes the comment, but you yourselves don't touch the burdens with one of your fingers. Who are these people today? If we were to say, this people are like who would you say that person is like today? I'm not wanting names, by the way. Nathan House. What would you say today? Well, you know, I thought about this, and this is my thoughts. I think these are the kind of people that expect you to do a lot, but they don't have to do anything. They expect the preacher to walk across the auditorium to say hi to them, or they're going to be mad, but they're not going to do that same journey. They won't make that same trek. But if he doesn't come across to shake my hand, I'm mad at that preacher. He didn't shake my hand. They're the people who expect the church to grow, but don't want to be involved in the activities that the church is trying to put forth. They're the people who are critical of work, people who are critical of the workers, but don't want to work themselves. They're leaders, they're preachers, they're teachers, they're Bible class teachers who teach that the congregation should be righteous, should live righteously, but outwardly, but inwardly, they're not righteous. You see, they put expectations on you, you put expectations on me or whoever it is, but you're not willing to do it yourselves. I heard people complain because they didn't get a card when they were sick. And yet I know that person doesn't send cards to others when they're sick. It's like there has to be same expectations. But the Pharisees, the lawyers didn't do that. They expected you to carry a heavy load, but they weren't going to. And we have to be careful as Christians that we don't do that same thing. Verse 47. He says, "Woe to you, for you build the tombs of the prophets, whom your fathers killed. So you are witnesses, and you consent to the deeds of your fathers, for they killed them, and you build their tombs. Therefore also the wisdom of God said, I will send them prophets and apostles, some whom they will kill and persecute, so that the blood of all the prophets shed from the foundation of the world may be charged against the generation, from the blood of Abel to the blood of Zechariah, who perished between the altar and the sanctuary. Yes, I tell you, it will be required of this generation." You see, they were hypocritical in seeing their own guilt. They didn't see their own sins. It says here that you build the tombs of the prophets. You see, their fathers had killed the prophets, right? Isaiah, Jeremiah, the prophets in the Old Testament, they were persecuted by the people who were receiving the message. They persecuted them. He says, you build the tombs of the prophets. You make it look nice. You make it look pretty. Your fathers killed them. And it's kind of ironic, isn't it? He says, it's kind of ironic because, you see, they were trying to act like they loved the prophets. They respected the prophets. But what were they guilty of? Well, they were guilty of not obeying the prophets. What else were they guilty of? Who was the greatest prophet that ever walked the face of this earth? Jesus Christ Himself. You see, while they acted like they cared about the prophets, they acted like they cared about what the prophets taught, what they did, the greatest prophet that ever walked the face of this earth was Jesus Christ. He was not only a prophet, but the Son of God. And these Pharisees who are here right now, some of them are going to be involved in killing Jesus Christ. So how ironic, how hypocritical, that they act like they care about the prophets. William Barclay made this comment, and this is kind of interesting, really short quote. "The only prophets that they admired were the dead ones." Only prophets they admired. Verse 52, "Woe to you lawyers, for you have taken away the key of knowledge. You did not enter yourselves, and you hindered those who were entering." He says, the lawyers were supposed to be teachers also. And he says, you've taken away the key of knowledge. You're not teaching people. And in fact, those who were trying to get into the kingdom of God, you're keeping them out. He says, you're neglecting the key. You're taking away the key of knowledge. What is he talking about here? They're making the Old Testament scriptures of no value. Well, how are they doing this? Well, the Old Testament scriptures told that there was going to be a Messiah who was going to come. It told all about the Messiah. But these lawyers, when they had Christ, the Messiah, in their midst, they didn't see it. And in fact, they made it so other people could not see the Messiah as well. And so they had missed the fact that the Christ was there. They were supposed to be looking for, recognizing the Christ, but they missed it, and they were blinding others to the fact that Christ was there too. It's kind of interesting when you look at Matthew chapter 16. I'm not going to have you turn there. But in Matthew chapter 16, you may recall there that Christ is talking to His apostles, and He asked them, "Who do people say I am?" And they said, "Some say you're Elijah, or John the Baptist, or Jeremiah, or one of the prophets." And then Christ listens to this, and He says, "Who do you guys say I am? Who do you apostles say I am?" And what does Peter say? "Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God." And Jesus knows that's the correct answer, and He tells Peter what? He says, "Blessed art thou, Simon, son of John, because kingdom, the flesh and blood hath not revealed this to you, but my Father who is in heaven." He goes on to tell him that "I'm given to you, Peter, the keys to the kingdom of heaven." Why did Peter get the keys to the kingdom of heaven, but the lawyers were blinded? What's going on here? You see, Peter, he got it. He got that this was Christ. And because he got it, he was the one who delivered the first gospel sermon in Acts chapter 2. He opened up the gate to heaven in Acts chapter 2. Opened up the gates to the church in Acts chapter 2. You see, the lawyers were missing it, but Peter got it. Peter was given, again, the keys to the kingdom of heaven. And it's so important. So what's happening here? The lawyers were failing to see. They were failing to lead. They were failing to teach properly. How important it is that teachers, preachers, Bible class teachers, that we teach properly, that we understand the message of God, and that we effectively teach it. Verse 53. And I want to just make this, before we read verse 53, I want to just, again, nail down what's happening here. Jesus is in a man's house, invited by this Pharisee to have dinner with them. And He opens up on them a huge discourse. He teaches them. He preaches to them. And what seems kind of harsh to us, we know is in love, He preaches to them that they are all making huge mistakes. They're making huge mistakes. Now, you may want, if you were hearing this yourselves, woe to you today, because your priorities are all messed up, you're leading people away from God, how would you respond to it? Well, I think if your heart was sincere, you'd say, "You know what, my heart's been pricked, how can I make it right?" But one of the indications that the Pharisee's heart was not right is the very next verse. Look at what is said in verse 53. Look at their response to the preaching. "And as He went away from there," Jesus, "the scribes and the Pharisees began to press Him hard and to provoke Him to speak about many things." Why were they doing this? "Lying in wait for Him to catch Him in something He might say." You see, their motives are revealed in that passage. They had ulterior motives. They were not trying to find the truth. They were not trying to find the love of God. They were trying to trap Christ. See, the principle of hypocrisy is here at work in the lives of the Pharisees and the lawyers. And the question is it at work in our lives today? The heart of hypocrisy is an exaggerated concern for the outward appearances. What is your biggest concern? Is your biggest concern how people view you? I want everybody to make sure they know I'm a Christian. I give my contribution. But do you go home and live in a way that's not appropriate for a Christian? I want to read to you from Romans chapter 12. I want to read to you from Romans chapter 12, verse 1 and 2. It's a verse you guys all know well. And in this passage, I want to ask this question before we read this passage. I want to ask this question. What are you offering to God? What are you offering to God? God doesn't just want you to be here on Sunday. He wants that. He doesn't just want you to contribute to the work. He wants that. But He wants a lot more than that. Like the Macedonians that we just read about, He wants all of you. He wants the inside of you. He wants the outside of you. He wants your heart. He wants your soul. He wants your mind. Look at what Paul said in Romans chapter 12, verse 1 and 2. He said, "I appeal to you." That word appeal is a begging. "I beg you, therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God," he's begging them to do what? "To present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship." We asked the question earlier, what does it mean to get back to the heart of worship? Giving to God your spiritual best. He said, which is your spiritual worship, verse 2. "Do not be conformed to this world." Don't be like this world. "But be transformed by the renewal of your mind. that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. My question as I end the lesson this morning is this: are you ready to give this to God today? If you're here this morning and you have not yet given to God your life, if you have not been baptized into Christ, perhaps you have been baptized into Christ, but you're continuing to struggle in sin as we all do, and you're falling away from Christ, or perhaps you've been putting too much emphasis on the outside and neglecting the inside. If there's anything we can help you with, we ask you to come forward as we sing a song that's been selected.